This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. Welcome to Guardian Radio AM. My name is Kate Quincy Parker, your host for this wonderful hour of discussion about something interesting that's fascinating and captivating that's happening in the international arena. Ms. Producer, getting a lot of feedback. You could assist with that, please. Thank you. So this show is an opportunity for us to look at a story that is happening internationally, something that that I think has either lessons to teach us or is, if it's just plain interesting, or something that we can learn from, something that we can, just consider as a country and as a community. But today we're going to talk about something that's happening in Central America, but it is, well, you'll understand, right? So the Central American country of El Salvador poured millions of dollars into the cryptocurrency known as Bitcoin. And 9 months ago, the El Salvador made Bitcoin legal tender, encouraging people to use it for day-to-day transactions. Now, of course, this week we're all watching as cryptocurrencies have tumbled with billions wiped from the value of tokens like Bitcoin. And the crash is affecting investors around the world, including the El Salvador government. So to be clear what it means to have Bitcoin as legal tender, that means that you can buy everything from food, gas. You can even buy houses. You can shop for pretty much anything in El Salvador with Bitcoin. And buying with cryptocurrency from street sellers and major chains alike is for the last 9 months, simply par for the course in El Salvador. And of course, this shows you how far Bitcoin has come, and it makes you wonder. I mean, you think about it, Bitcoin was dreamt up on internet forums in 2008, and here we are less than 20 years later. Not just one country, as we'll see, but at least two countries have determined that, this thing, this idea is substantial enough for them to make their country's economies accommodate Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. So the El Salvadorian president, Nayib Bukele, to make cryptocurrency legal tender meant that in theory, it had to be accepted by all businesses alongside El Salvador's other currency, which is the US dollar. But now, of course, this crash, a cryptocurrency crash, has raised questions about the policy, especially the use of nearly $100 million of public funds used to buy Bitcoin. And every purchase was celebrated by President Bukele with a tweet, right? So you're talking about the 2,300 Bitcoins that El Salvador owns, which are now worth only about half of what the government paid for them. But the finance minister, of course, is brushing off criticism, saying, you know, there's extremely minimal financial risk. Well, I mean, that's a, we have in our country a similar gamble where the government, the Minnesota administration decided that it was going to gamble $5 million or $25 million, depending on how you looked at it, on small businesses. And the gamble was, we're going to create a system to try to get this money into their hands and hope that they can, with sufficient support and sufficient government policy support, create sustainable businesses that can help to create resiliency in the economy, help to create employment opportunities, help to create sustainable businesses. You know, so we are not immune to the concept of governments taking a gamble. But this gamble is something else, right? Even the International Monetary Fund got involved and has been urging El Salvador to reverse its decision to make Bitcoin legal tender, arguing that it's too unstable for that purpose. And you have local economists who are increasingly concerned. There's a story on it in the BBC News today. And in the story, local economist Tatiana Marroquin is quoted, and she's saying that the government doesn't have enough money to help vulnerable people. And so it shouldn't be taking risks by pouring public funds into cryptocurrency. And she also complains that there's a lack of transparency. And she's quoted as saying, we don't know exactly when or with what money they've bought Bitcoins, unquote. Meanwhile, you have Tourism Minister Moreno Valdez, who is quoted insisting that Salvadorians have confidence in President Bukele despite Bitcoin's falling value. So the tourism minister is quoted as saying, we know that each of the president's decisions are made in the right moment. People have a lot of trust in his decisions and in how the country's economy is going. So as I mentioned earlier, there were other countries that were thought to be considering following El Salvador's move before the crash began in May. But so far, only the Central African Republic has followed suit. And that country's president, Faustin Archange Touadéra, announced on Twitter that saying that Bitcoin is universal money, that the Central African Republic has now also made Bitcoin legal tender in their country. before I get back to the IMF, I found that El Salvador is not satisfied with just having Bitcoin as legal tender, or at least the president is not. President Bukele has announced plans for a new city called Bitcoin City to be built at the foot of the volcano that will provide geothermal energy and power a giant Bitcoin mine. These people are deep. Officials say they are confident that they'll be able to raise the funds and pay a looming foreign debt bill of $800 million. But the cryptocurrency crash is piling pressure on the El Salvador government as it continues to bet big on Bitcoin. So we have a digital fiat currency in the Bahamas called Sand Dollar, which is not the same as a cryptocurrency. There's a tremendous difference there. But we also have a number of Bahamians who are in the cryptocurrency space. And it is becoming increasingly popular to see cryptocurrency transactions occurring in the country. And I'm curious about whether or not we are worried. So sorry. Curious about whether or not, when you look at the example of what has happened in a country like El Salvador, the exposure of our economy to this kind of volatility is it as big a risk as it seems? And for our friends who are in the cryptocurrency space, this would be a great time to talk about how a broader economy is insulated against the kind of volatility that El Salvador and I guess now the Central African Republic are subjected to based on the decision to have cryptocurrencies as legal tender in their economies. Of course, you know the numbers as usual, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and the text line is open as usual. That's 422-4796. And in case you didn't know, the 4796 is from GR, which is Guardian Radio 96. See, there's a method to Dwight Strawn's madness. But he's absolutely mad. Yeah, you're right. So to get back to the story. The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, has urged El Salvador to reverse its decision to make Bitcoin legal tender. That decision was made, as I said, 9 months ago in September of 2021. And by making that choice, El Salvador became the first country to allow consumers to use the cryptocurrency in all transactions alongside the US dollar. I'll come back to that. The decision led to large-scale protests over fears that it would bring instability and inflation to the Salvadorian economy. And when you consider that Bitcoin has lost about half of its value since November, I suppose you would not be surprised to learn that the IMF has warned Salvadorian government of the risks of cryptocurrency, stressing that it would be difficult to get a loan from the IMF if a cryptocurrency is legal tender in your economy. And now that things have gone the way they've gone, the IMF's directors are urging Salvadorian authorities to narrow the scope of the Bitcoin law by removing Bitcoin's legal tender status. Now, this is where this is going. The IMF highlighted large risks associated with the use of Bitcoin on financial stability, financial integrity, and consumer protection, and with issuing Bitcoin-backed bonds. So Bitcoin is, it's controversial because in part its value can fluctuate so significantly. It's risen and fallen dramatically over the last year, 2 years alone. And when you consider, let's just do some quick math. So let me pull up my calculator here. On Tuesday, Bitcoin was trading for $37,000 per coin. And remember, the El Salvadorian government has 2,300 coins. So that's a value of $85.1 million. Versus what it was worth in November, which would have been $67,734. That same 2,300 coins, which is now only worth a little over $58 million, was worth $155 million in November. So the value of El Salvador's Bitcoin investment lost $100 million just between November and now. Caller, you're live on Guardian Radio AM. Thank you for joining us. We look forward to hearing your thoughts.
Good morning. Can you hear me now?
Hello? Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, I'm glad you're doing this because I'm also glad that this government is leading the way, and also a company that's now being built. This, from the Bahamas, and from my perspective, I know that this is a big market. This is what you call a farming market. And I urge the airmen to do their homework and be careful of who you register with, because you register the right people, especially with the government. You could make tons of money off it. Behemoths internationally have made tons of money. I know behemoths will benefit. I am working on it, and I have seen the numerous of beneficial financially. It can be used for me and other behemoths who get into it. Follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you remember when Facebook first came up with farming, faith farming?
Yes.
Okay, this is similar to that. But only one thing with that, with this, this is serious income for your own personal use. Electronically, right from your PC or to your wallet. That's the difference. So I urge that a lot of education be done when this company be finished and built. I urge the EMS to educate themselves, inform themselves rapidly, and get involved. But I also, I thank my prime minister and his government for leading the way. I think Bahamas could be number one and the world with them. So all behemoths, financially young behemoths, do your homework. And I'm glad you bring it up. And I'm glad, hope you continue this, my brother, because me and you may only be sitting on Pink Sun, but you could be sitting in a condominium somewhere in Antigua. Have a good day.
Thank you kindly, my brother. So, that's interesting. I'm not gonna comment any further on what Conchin said, but yeah. So this is a country that has decided to embrace the modern technological wonder that is cryptocurrency, which so many people see as a people see it as, well, let's take this next call and then we'll get further. We'll philosophize a little more on the other side. Caller, thank you very much for joining us. You are live on Guardian Radio AM.
If you'd like to make a call.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess you can call us back then. But I have a friend who considers the whole cryptocurrency vibe a scam, so to speak. And then I have another friend who thinks that it is evil because it's it almost seems like a Ponzi scheme to them, right? Because where is the value that supports the token, right? Bitcoin is a token, but where is the value that supports that token? And it's like people, so you have that level of skepticism that exists in the country. And then I also have friends who are literally in the business of cryptocurrency. And then you run the gamut between there, where there are some people who are experimenting with it. They may have a wallet that they invested a couple of dollars in cryptocurrency just to see what it's like out there. And then we have all heard the purveyors of this as an investment opportunity on the talk radio shows, and we've heard them expounding on it. So the question of suitability for legal tender is the question that I thought was an interesting one for us today, given given that El Salvador's, economy is not so much different from ours. I thought it was a really interesting comparison to make. And don't forget, we have there are people who don't understand how the sand dollar works, which is odd. Right, so sand dollar is it's like Bahamian dollar cash, right? You can have a sand dollar wallet, and you can use that wallet to pay for goods and services around the country. But because Bahamians are uncomfortable, I think, with the idea of a digital currency in some ways, despite the fact that sand dollar is not only legal, but it's easy to use and it's accepted everywhere. I mean, you see most of these places that you go that accept digital payments, whether that's a credit card or a debit card or whatever, you'll see the little sand dollar sign there saying that they accept sand dollar as well. But I don't get the impression that the sand dollar is being taken up as strongly as it could be, despite the fact that, you know, we got a lot of credit, so to speak, in the international arena for being the first country to have its own digital fiat currency. But, you know, that was just, I mean, I love my folks at the central bank. John Roll is a good friend. But, you know, that press release was perhaps a little misleading because, yeah, it exists, but it's not like we are actually using it. And to me, you know, there's an opportunity that continues to be missed there by the public. Not, you know, I mean, the central bank is doing its best to promote it, but, you know, it's us. We ain't checking, right? And I think we have a good reason not to. And you consider what's going on with Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, then you can see why some people feel a little concerned. But once again, all right, so what's happening? This was what I wanted to talk about today as well. What is happening with cryptocurrency, particularly with Bitcoin, right? I read somewhere this cute statement said the first rule of writing about Bitcoin is don't write about Bitcoin. Because, of course, whatever you write is going to be different by the time anybody reads it. So, as of this morning, Bitcoin is trading at, oh, so sorry. No. Apologies, folks. Phone call. The phone, I had the phone off, but I shouldn't have. Yeah, so Bitcoin is now trading at $21,974 per coin. It's fallen 25% in the last week alone to its lowest value in 18 months. I remember the almost $70,000 in November. Well, you know, that's gone. And if you look at a graph or a chart, you know, they're all red and they're all going in one direction, and that is down. And it's not just crypto that's looking bad, right? So you got recession looming, you got soaring inflation, you got interest rates that are rising, and costs of living are going crazy. The stock markets are also wobbling, right? With the S&P now in a bear market, which means it's, you know, 20% down from its recent high. And so, yeah, even the big investors are holding on to their cash. And so that leaves ordinary investors, not the rich hedge fund owners or corporations, but, you know, people like us. We have less to invest in anything, much less something as volatile and unpredictable as cryptocurrency, which feels like too great a risk in this day and age. And the fact that it's unregulated and unprotected by financial authorities makes it difficult to contemplate, you know, investing your savings in it. Because if you do, and it loses value, or you lose access to your crypto wallet, poof, your money is gone. We have another caller. Thank you very much for joining us live on Guardian Radio AM.
Yes. How may we? Mr. Parker, how you doing? It's Alan Johnson.
Hey, Alan.
How you doing, sir?
Been a minute, man. You all right?
Yeah, been hanging in there. I think one of the, first let me just say, one of the things that I've watched this whole crypto asset, blockchain, tokenization type argument going back, to 2009, having been one of the early adopters of it. Initially when we used Bitcoin, it was on the dark web type environment where I provided a certain amount of services that I attached a value to, and somebody else, you know, I basically say I could open up a computer for you or something. You could do a denial of service for me. You put a value on it. We assign a certain amount of Bitcoin that way because, you know, you were at different locations and we were able to trade it around and keep track of it, that type of environment. But Bitcoin has evolved now to an argument that's in the word of currency. I know you just said something about token. In the purest sense, the difference between a token and cryptocurrency is that cryptocurrencies are basically a native asset off a blockchain, whereas tokens are basically built on top of an existing blockchain. I'm going to come back to that, but when you talked about the sand dollar, and I think one of the things is that the Bahamas, you've heard me said for a decade, is one of the most digitally prepared country in the world, yet we suffer from a high level of digital ignorance in regard to what technology is besides its consumptive use in the Bahamas. So when you even talk about sand dollar, and I think it's a utmost failure of the central bank and explaining to people there's no difference between the sand dollar and the actual physical dollar you hold in your hand. And so you just have to educate them concerning the use of wallets. I think also these cards, I would call it, like, I don't want to call it names, but these programs, you know, use. The problem is that they don't even differentiate the people that they are both there. Payment platform as well as sand dollar platforms, you know, they act in the form of duality. Now, and so it is just a matter of education concerning what it is, because what it does is by embracing sand dollar, you could actually bring a lot of the unbanked into the environment, because that'll be a broader conversation. But going back to crypto assets, for me, I believe that a Bitcoin is nothing more than the greater fool theory. As long as you can find another fool greater than you to buy it for more than you pay for it, you'll always be in a better position because it has no intrinsic value. It has no real value in application in the world except for what somebody else is willing to pay for it for you. And this is, I think, the mistake that Venezuela made in adopting it. He bought into the hype. Now, where he has the power, the energy consumption, because again, that's where Bitcoin failure is its ability to handle real world transactions. So, but where he has the energy, not just in cryptocurrency, but not just in Bitcoin, but he had the opportunity to make that place a destination for mining and management of digital assets. and that's which mostly is cryptocurrency. Let's use an example. I don't want to use them, but let's use an example of the Bahamas. I know we have a digital assets bill, and I think one of the greatest mistakes we make is that in the Bahamas, we have adopted this concept that cryptocurrencies is digital assets, when the fact is digital assets include documents, audio, videos, images, graphics, logos, slide, presentation, files, websites, books, all of these different things. And so even though we call it the DARE bill, I think we should have looked at it as a broader spectrum of what digital assets are rather than this concept of cryptocurrency or even tokens. But I put to you that the facade of a Bitcoin it's not going to be no real recovery. And I think what the good thing about what is happening about this Bitcoin is that it'll clear the path for real use and application of the blockchain, taking into consideration that 99.9%, I would say, of all existing cryptocurrencies or what they call tokens in the world has no value and is nothing more than scams. 99.9. I put it as that much. And so that leaves you about 5, 6, maybe 10 at the most that may have practical value in real life scenarios type environment. But I think hopefully Venezuela learns a lesson and flips its script and go into the jurisdictional aspect of having it mined, because one of the most intensive things of this is energy, which again brings us to the bohemian environment for digitization of the Bahamas. You hear them talk about all these green, blue, orange, aquamarine, ocean economy. The biggest problem with that is the same thing, I don't think you are not a show touch on it, is BPL. And so we can never be competitive. We'll never have a digital Bahamas for the full use of what is called digital digitization until BPL brings a sub 10 cent total billing per kilowatt hours across the Bahamas. And so I don't know how long that would be, but we're only going to be talking, because you have to be competitive. You have to be globally competitive in spite of FTX and all of them coming here. Those are offices. But these are not ecosystems. You know, like how you look at the Earth. The Earth is an ecosystem, right? And you see the different variations for oxygen and plant life, fish life, animal life, everything exists in this ecosystem. So when you start talking about digital assets, you're talking about ecosystems being created. You start talking about blue economy. What is the ecosystem for these aspects of the digital economy be planted, grown, and maintained and sustained? Same thing with the blue or the orange economy and anything else of that sort. Considering that the orange, the blue, the green, the aquamarine, the ocean, the knowledge, conceptual, digital, circular, silver, all these things that's been said by government now is 90% energy dependent, then you could see the fallacy, in spite of us with this fantasy of book where we're going to be involved with blockchain and cryptocurrencies and all these other different things. We'll be nothing but a docile for an office to be here. But the real aspect of incorporating cryptocurrency in the Bahamas is a fallacy. And I challenge anyone in the blockchain market, anyone in the government or anything else, to have a conversation. I think it's time for the Bahamas and behemoths to wake up from this dream that you will become a Bitcoin millionaire, because you're not mining. You're buying fractionals of Bitcoins, hoping that the greater fool comes behind you who will pay even greater than it is for you. Whereas there is some true opportunity if we could get energy fixed for this new incarnation of the creations of real-world tokens backed by real-world assets, not these algorithmic type things, for the Bahamas do become the destination for digital assets in a data-based economy.
All right. You raise some good points as usual. The questions of appetite and also of capacity are the first ones that come to mind, right? Because even if we take C. Allen's point of, you know, the greater fool coming behind to buy for more than you spent, there's still the fact that that works because there is an appetite.
It's called FOMO, F-O-M-O, fear of missing out.
Yeah, but FOMO works because there's a reality that people want to make sure that they don't miss out. And we have, how does one say? We have a reality to deal with about not wanting to accept sometimes that if a thing is, or if it smells too good to be true, it may be too good to be true.
You know, believe it or not, that brings us to this carbon credit thing. You know, we want to believe it so badly that we are going to be the world first. We're going to do these things, but our behavior—it's like I can compare our argument to a Jewish restaurant serving pork. You know, because what happens is this is where the Bahamas has this thing about the fear of missing out on everything. This is why we have a lot of talk about everything. And so, for instance, with the Bahamas with carbon credits, you have, which is a digital asset also, now it's moving to that realm, is that we don't do the things that is necessary. Let's use an example. Just go to Guinea. The Guinea here, 3,000 acres of mangroves destroyed, a World Heritage Site in Bimini destroyed. We're building harbors and marinas and et cetera. At the same time, we're destroying the environment with oil, BPL, oil leaks or whatever. We're destroying down on Kamaika Road. We are bragging about bringing on more that fuel burning type capacity, and on. At the same time, we're running around the world saying that we're going to have a net zero type environment, which basically says we will create an environment for you to continue to produce the carbon that is going to cause us to be underwater, as opposed to having an absolute zero strategy where we should be arguing for an absolute zero type of environment. That's the first thing. We should be the first nation in the world arguing that, making that argument. Because no matter what, if they continue to exceed the 2% rule, the 2-degree rule, the Bahamas will not exist in 40 years or so. So we are basically saying we will... But this is the fear of missing. I'm saying the fear of missing out. So we are destroying ourselves because we don't want to miss out on this greatest new trend. And so, you know, if you imagine if we give China all of our carbon credits, they give them permission to continue to produce the carbon dioxide. So the carbon dioxide creates the environment for the Bahamas to disappear from the earth. Did we solve the problem, or we give them permission to accelerate our disappearance? And so this is where the greater fool theory, the fear of missing out, comes in with these so-called cryptocurrencies and dream tokens. And so, like you said, in the Bahamas, we have a development strategy of fear of missing out on everything. And if you go over the last two decades, you can see the utterances that has been made about almost every major event that it comes up into the world, even for digitally. We always have some government administration who says, oh, we're going to embrace this, we're going to do this. Remember the tech hub and all these other different things. And so this is why, based on as I'm observing, I am very close to writing this administration off and looking to the Pintat administration to maybe bring change that is necessary. Because, you know, as you see people begin to dig in and they use all means necessary to support their position, it basically tells you that by virtue of previous behavior, they will maintain this for the next 3 years. Because a year already technically passed. The 23rd made 40 weeks. 40 weeks for delivery of a baby. The 23rd of this month made 9 months that the PLP is in 40 weeks, and we don't have a delivery of anything. And so if they lock in for the next 3 years, we can only then look to the new administration led by Mr. Pintat to basically flip the script. And so this is where we don't have these open, honest conversations. We have these anti-intellectual conversations. If you don't agree with me, I'll exclude you. We have no conversation. And I tell people all the time, I have no problems with being wrong. I just need you to present your evidence to tell me that I'm off basis.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for the call, Alan. I appreciate it.
But hopefully I do have faith and I do have courage that the 3 score and 10 people will be off the scene very soon. And the new digital mindset, as opposed to digitized mindset, the digital mindset live and think digital. The digitized mindset is one who could mimic and try to copy. And I'm looking for a new governance, but what we have to do is we have to make room for them to actually come into the space and not be afraid that your 3 score and 10 is more years behind you than in front of you, and you will be leaving the Bahamas. It would be great if you leave it for someone else.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you. Yeah, folks. So that's we look around the world, we see the way other people are navigating through their existence. We see what they are doing to the economies and communities where their decisions are playing out. And we are not living in isolation, right? So it's possible that we can learn from what is happening elsewhere in the world and use those lessons to facilitate the ease of development and forward motion for our own economy. I think the example of what's going on with the adoption of Bitcoin as legal tender in El Salvador is incredibly instructive, right? Because that is a almost a proof of concept for the Bahamas to embrace the sand dollar, which is our own digital fiat currency, right? And if El Salvador can do it, and the Central African Republic can do it with Bitcoin, which, you know, is smoke and mirrors to some people, then we should be able to fully embrace the digital fiat currency that is exactly the same as the Bahamian dollar that is put forward by our central bank. Those are my thoughts. Thank you very much for joining us. Look forward to talking to you again next week. And the revolution is up next after the news. And so you continue to be good. And thank you very much. Bye.